Next week's sunrise will be at 7:58, while sunset can be expected around 4 p.m. Temperatures early next week should be around 6 degrees Celsius. It will be rainy and rather windy.
Welcome to the Sunwell Talking News for November the 29th for the blind and visually impaired community living in and around Sunwell.
Headlines from this week's Express and Star. Wednesday's news: parcel firms failing to deliver to millions. Tram fare rises and keeping the trams on track. Tough consequences for rogue landlords. Thursday's news: a grant stops cuts to West Midlands bus services. MP says government means business in tackling asylum crisis. Talented youngster lands roles in three pantos. Friday's news: pubs help tackle loneliness at Christmas. Delving deeper into the caverns in Dudley. Saturday's news: Albion mourns the passing of the dock. Controversial plan to build new HMO in Smevic approved. Plan for 24/7 casino in Bearwood in spite objections from police. Monday's news: cuddle up to a Highland cow. The comeback of the moustache. West Midlands the worst area for road litter. Tuesday's news: Black Friday deals are often cheaper at other times. Council crackdown stops 10 fraudulent right-to-buy applications. Mason demands real fight from his team.
Those stories and more coming up courtesy of Express and Star Publications. As usual, along the way and a quarter or so into this issue, you'll have the TV and radio listings. There's also a feature from Talking News Federation on Vocalise, the audio description people. There'll be two reports, at least I hope there'll be two reports, on West Bromwich Albion, even though they're not doing so very well these days. And I hope to squeeze in the one on tonight's Wednesday's match against Birmingham towards the end of this edition. We'll get straight on now, though, with the news from last week's papers, starting with Wednesday.
Hello, everyone. My name's Mia, and today I'm going to be reading some newspaper articles from the Express and Star, Wednesday, the 19th of November. I hope everyone is well and enjoying the Christmas countdown. There's officially 36 days left until the big day. Dental practice improved, says inspectors. An Albury dental practice has improved and met all requirements after a follow-up inspection by a government body. Dr. Brown's Dental Surgery in Dog Kennel Lane, Albury, was inspected by the Care Quality Commission on October 31st. It found all the regulations safe, effective, caring, responsive, and well-led been met. The follow-up visit was prompted by an original inspection in June, which had found the practice, run by Dr. Graham Brown, was not providing well-led care and was in breach of Regulation 17, Good Governance of the Health and Social Care Act 2008. But during the follow-up inspection, it was found the practice had now met regulations. The inspector's report said, "Leadership was effective and promoted a culture of continuous improvement. Systems and processes now in place enabled the provider to assess, monitor, and mitigate the risks relating to the health, safety, and welfare of service users and others who may be at risk." No let up on hard work. Hegabo. Albion striker Aun Hegabo insists his full focus is on maintaining a work ethic that has characterised his start to life at the club. Summer signing Hegabo celebrated a home league goal for the first time as Ryan Mason's men signed off for the break with an important 2-1 success over Oxford. The Norway international has found it tough going to score regularly in the opening months of his first season in English football following a £4.7 million transfer from Brann. But the 24-year-old has earned the goodwill of Baggies supporters for his relentless work ethic and battling in the final third when so often isolated. "The hard work is the most important thing. That's the only thing I need to focus on," Hegabo told the Express and Star. "That's the mentality I've got. We have to use the break positively now with a good mental break to get ready. It's a long season." Hegabo took his tally to the season to 3 in all competitions with the fine header against Oxford, having netted in the defeat at Middlesbrough and EFL Cup exit to Derby. The striker added, "We feel like we have a lot of potential to score more than we have, so we get frustrated, of course. But at the same time, we've been constructive, working on the training ground to improve those numbers. Hegerbo has not gone away with Norway for the World Cup qualifying action this time, having won his first two caps earlier this season. He instead joined Albion colleagues who returned to training towards the end of the week after a brief break. Parcel firms are failing to deliver to millions. More than a third of people experienced a problem with their most recent parcel delivery across a market that is broken, Citizens Advisor said. Yodel trails behind in the annual parcel league table, compiled by the charity after the firm failed to improve on last year's score of 2 stars out of 5. Royal Mail achieved top place with 3.25 stars. The most common problems people faced with their last delivery included the driver leaving before they had time to get to the door, 29%, their parcel being left in an insecure location, 24%, and parcels arriving late, 24%. Citizens Advice said its findings showed there had been marginal changes in scores over the last 5 years, but the overall picture was one of consumers being persistently failed by parcel companies. A record 50 million people, or 37% of those who have used a parcel service, experienced a problem with their latest delivery, a survey for the report found. The research, carried out in a snapshot 1 month period, reveals that the rate of parcel problems remains at the highest level seen in half a decade. The charity's league table looks at the top 5 delivery companies by parcel volume and measures their performance against criteria including customer service, delivery problems, and how well they meet accessibility needs, such as people needing louder knocking or longer to answer the door. Scores achieved by firms for accessibility worsened this year, despite a new condition by Ofcom requiring firms to give disabled consumers the opportunity to report their accessibility needs. Citizens Advice's survey suggests that 3 million people who have an accessibility need they would like to share, 37%, are still unable to share these with firms. Complaints and customer service rankings remained stagnant, with almost half, 47%, of those who had experienced a problem with their delivery facing a further issue trying to resolve the problem, such as a slow response, issues with automated systems such as a chatbot, and having to contact a firm multiple times to get a response. Ofcom introduced guidance on complaints and accessibility in 2023, but Citizens Advice said its research and Ofcom's own findings showed many parcel firms were still ignoring the rules. Citizens Advice said it was calling on Ofcom to monitor performance and fine the worst offenders. Citizens Advice Chief Executive Dame Claire Moriarty said, "Ofcom has passed the parcel of responsibility for long enough. We've been doing the work of the regulator for 5 years now, by holding parcel companies to account and speaking up for consumers who are bearing the brunt of persistently poor service. Our league table has tracked parcel problems from warehouse to doorstep. We continue to see millions of people chasing lost parcels, having their accessibility needs ignored, and hitting a brick wall when they try to complain. The question now is whether the regulator will take tougher action to improve the parcel market once and for all." An Ofcom spokesperson said, "We have a strong track record of holding parcel firms to account on behalf of the public. That has involved tracking people's experiences of parcel deliveries for over a decade, and as a result, introducing strengthened regulations on parcel firms in 2023. Under these rules, postal operators must have a simple and transparent complaints process in place and have clear and effective policies and procedures for the fair treatment of disabled customers. While overall satisfaction is reasonably high at 78%, People's experiences can vary, depending on which parcel company delivers their package, and we're continuing to press operators to make further improvements. We'll also continue to work with Citizens Advice as the statutory consumer advocate for Post to achieve our shared goal of ensuring consumers receive a reliable service whichever company is used. Opinion Research surveyed 8,000 UK adults between August 29th and September 27th. Prices up to keep trams on track. Increasing West Midlands tram fares will ensure the financial sustainability of the network, transport bosses have said. Passengers will see a significant jump in prices for the Midland Metro of up to 10%. Members of the West Midlands Combined Authority Board approved a request to hike the cost of travel for tram users in the new year. Bosses said tram tickets have not risen in line with bus and rail prices, whilst concessionary charges would not be affected. Single ticket prices will increase by between 20 pence and 50 pence, and day tickets will go up by 30 pence on short distance trips and 50 pence to 70 pence on longer distance trips. Season tickets will increase by 10%. If agreed, a Zone 1 single ticket will go up almost 9% from £2.30 to £2.50, while a Zone 1 weekly pass will increase around 10% from £12.20 to £13.40. Other price increases include a single ticket for Zone 1 to 2, rising from £3.20 to £3.50. A peak day ticket, Zone 1 to 2, increasing from £4.70 to £5.20. And a month ticket, Zone 1 to 2, rising to £61.90, £5.60 more than the current price. Anne Shaw, the outgoing Executive Director of Transport for West Midlands, said, "Fares have been kept low and have not risen in line with rail and bus over the last few years. An approval to increase fares by above inflation by approximately 40 pence per journey is being asked. This helps with the overall financial sustainability of the transport system. It's also worth noting the Metro still provides support to older, disabled and young people through its concessions, and there is minimal impact on other customers." A Metro spokesperson for West Midlands Metro said, "A decision to increase fares is never taken lightly, but these modest price rises will help us to meet increased running costs while ensuring the future sustainability of the Metro." Tough consequences for rogue landlords, Region's mayor says. The elected mayor for the West Midlands has warned rogue landlords to expect tough consequences if they fail to comply with new laws banning no-fault evictions. Richard Parker said, "Renters' Rights Act, which will mean landlords cannot evict tenants without good reason, form part of sweeping changes to the private rental system when it comes into force on May the 1st. Other measures include a limit on rent increases and the end of fixed-term tenancy contracts and rental bidding." Welcoming the new laws, Mr. Parker said the region would be proactive in using them to improve quality of life for private renters and raise the decency and safety of their homes. But he also encouraged the thousands of fair and responsible West Midlands landlords to find out what the changes would mean for them and use the next few months to get ready. Mr. Parker said the Act represented the biggest changes for private renters in a generation, but also sought to create a fairer system for landlords by strengthening their rights with legally valid reasons to get their properties back, including rent areas and antisocial behaviour. He said, "Everyone deserves a safe, secure and decent home. It's a fundamental right and essential for people's well-being and their ability to get on in life." While many landlords do right by their tenants, there are others that don't, leaving young children in damp and healthy homes and their parents living in fear of losing their home through no fault of their own. We must keep driving up the standard of private rental accommodation in our region and protect vulnerable people and families. That's why I will be working with our local councils in using these new laws to support fair-minded landlords so they are ready for May the 1st. But also crack down on those rogue landlords who have blighted too many lives for far too long. Councils will be legally responsible for overseeing the new laws, backed by stronger enforcement powers and support from the West Midlands Combined Authority, said Mr. Parker. This includes fines of up to £7,000 for breaches, rising to £40,000 for repeated breaches of the rules or for serious offences. Tenants or local authorities would also be able to seek rent repayment orders, forcing landlords to pay back rent for offences. Mr. Parker said, no-fault evictions put hundreds of West Midland families at risk of homelessness each year. The Act will also prevent landlords from increasing rents more than once a year, asking for more than 1 month's rent in advance and pitting prospective tenants against one another through rental bidding wars.
Hello, Jan Lloyd, reading articles from the Express and Star on the 20th of November. Grant to stop cuts to West Midlands bus services is agreed by Gurdip Tandy. A subsidy to secure the West Midlands bus network and stop services being cut has been given the green light. Members of the West Midlands Combined Authority, the WMCA, board have agreed to continue the bus network support grant when the current deal comes to an end in December. The new deal, which gives financial support to operators, will last for a further 15 months. Transport for West Midlands, TFWM, provides a subsidy of circa £50 million per year to ensure around 30% of existing services remain in operation. Anne Shaw, outgoing executive director of TFWM, said, "We are providing commercial operators with funding as best value for money option to maintain the reach of the networked communities. The current grant comes to an end in December and we are now in negotiations for the next arrangements. This report seeks delegations to conclude these and enter into new arrangements from January onwards. If those negotiations do not result in the new grant arrangement, decisions will need to come back to the board or, if it is not within the budget provided, as well. This should protect the network from large-scale changes, but, just to note, there will be some efficiencies on the bus network resulting in some changes, which we will make sure both the public and members know well about in advance of those to prevent any future confusion." Earlier this year, WMCA agreed to press ahead with the Mayor Richard Parker's plans to move the current regulated private company-led network to a franchise model. He said deregulating the network will give the public greater control over fares, routes and timetables. On the extension of the grant, Mr. Parker said, "It is helping us stabilise and secure our bus network in the run-up to franchising, but also it will ensure all of us take responsibility to ensure the transport network is properly funded and we are not leaving ourselves with a burden of a very large operating deficit." Article is accompanied by a picture of the number 82 bus in Bearwood. "Government means business on tackling asylum crisis," says MP, by Mark Andrews. A Black Country MP says, "This government means business when it comes to tackling the asylum crisis in Britain." Antonia Bance, MP for Tipton and Wednesbury, praised plans announced by Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood to reduce the number of migrants arriving in the UK in small boats. However, the plans received a more muted response from Kat Eccles, her Labour colleague for the neighbouring Stourbridge constituency, who said the priority should be creating safe and legal routes for asylum seekers to enter the UK from mainland Europe. "The government has described its reforms as the most hard-hitting changes to the asylum system in a generation, saying it would reduce the number of arrivals, close legal loopholes, and significantly increase removals of those who have no right to remain in the UK. Since 2021, more than 400,000 people have claimed asylum in the UK, more than double the figure from a decade earlier. A quarter of those are claiming taxpayer-funded benefits. The government says rising arrivals combined with years of slow removals have put mounting pressure on public services and on communities across the country. Miss Bant said, "Our asylum system is broken and people in Tipton and Wensbury are fed up. Labour is delivering the radical action they've demanded, faster removals, tougher enforcement and an end to the legal loopholes that have let this spiral out of control. This government means business." But Miss Eccles warned of the dangers of pandering to populist opinion and scapegoating refugees. "It's absolutely right that we should know who is coming into our country and stop dangerous boat crossings in the Channel," she said. "But we don't achieve that by pandering to populist opinion and scapegoating refugees. We need safe legal routes and the ability to apply for asylum before reaching the UK. The government laid out plans to control immigration over 12 months ago. We certainly don't need to start fiddling with the European Convention on Human Rights to aid deportations." Objections to licence bid over noise worries by Christian Barnett. Police have objected to a plan to extend the opening hours of a restaurant and shisha lounge in Albury. Italian restaurant and shisha bar Liam's Lounge in Causeway Green Road, Albury, has applied to Sandwell Council to open until 2:30 a.m. every day. West Midlands Police and Sandwell Council's Environmental Health Department have both come out against the move over the potential to cause disruption for neighbours. The region's police force said that the restaurant, located in a row of shops off the busy Wolverhampton Road, would add to the noise problems for those living in the flats above and homes opposite. The current licence was granted in March 2024, which allowed for the restaurant and shisha lounge to open until 12:30 a.m. and 2 a.m. on New Year's Eve. The proposals would see the opening hours extended permanently to 2:30 a.m. every day. Alcohol could be served until 2 a.m. The application also asks for permission to open until 3:30 a.m. on New Year's Eve. West Midlands Police said the early hours licence was akin to a late night bar rather than a restaurant. "The premises are situated in a small row of shops in a mainly residential area," the force said in its objection. West Midlands Police is aware there have been noise complaints from residents about the current operation. "The hours applied for are late for the locality and cause concern as to how such late hours will impact on the locality. A premises open until the early hours of the morning in a mainly residential area is an obvious concern, and the current licence and the enclosed application provides very few reassurances as to how this will be managed." And the article is accompanied by a photograph of Liam's Lounge in Albury, and you can clearly see that there are flats above both that and the shop next door. Talented youngster lands role in three pantos. Oh, yes, he has. James Vukumovic. It's set to be busy, but also very exciting festive period for a Tipton youngster after securing roles in a hat-trick of pantomimes. Jet Austin Richards will be hitting the stages of Wolverhampton's Grand Theatre and Stafford's Gatehouse Theatre after auditioning for and securing roles in Sleeping Beauty, as well as appearing at the Mary Stevens Hospice production of Jack and the Beanstalk in February. The biggest role of the three is in the Wolverhampton production, where he secured the role of Prince Stefan in the show, and the 10-year-old spoke about the audition process and his excitement when he found out he'd got the role. He said, "The audition was at an arena in Wolverhampton, and you had to send in a video of your singing, and then they called me in and brought a lot of us in, and we did a little game to warm up. They then sat us down and we did one of the songs from the panto. Then we went into groups of three and sang the songs, and I do remember being very excited when I found out I'd got the role. I've been on the stage at the Grand Theatre a few times before, and while a panto isn't as big as doing musicals for me, but because it's in the Grand and because there's lots of celebrities, it feels more exciting." Jet, who said his favourite musicals were Everybody's Talking About Jamie and Billy Elliot, said his role in the Stafford production was a part of a junior ensemble, so he might be playing a villager, and said he was just starting to tell people about getting the roles and doing this first rehearsal at the Grand Theatre. His mother Jodie had also graced the stage for the Grand Theatre as a part of a junior ensemble, and said she was proud to see her son getting such a great opportunity. She said, "I know how much it meant to me when I did panto when I was younger, and how it changed my path and gave me the enjoyment of the taste of success and being involved with celebrities, as I was involved with Linda Lasardi and Sam Kane back then. Things have now changed a bit, as kids like Jet are supposed to become YouTubers and the like, but I am really looking forward to seeing him be part of it, particularly as they haven't had kids at the Grand Panto for quite a few years. It's going to be a hectic few weeks, as he's got both Wolverhampton and Stafford, and this is no time to be ill or have a cold, but it's great, and it'll make Christmas really special because he's at the nice age where you really appreciate the performing opportunities. And the article's accompanied by a photograph of Jet and his mother standing outside, presumably their own house, surrounded by some beautiful flowers. I'm not sure if they're real or not, but beautiful bright pink, purple flowers cascading around them. They're both looking very happy about his exciting chances now too. Raising a Glass to Local Ales on Offer at Museum by James Vakramovich. Award-winning visitor attraction Black Country Living Museum is set to serve yet another of the region's most iconic brews at its two historic pubs. Batham's Brewery is joining forces with Dudley's Famous Attraction, with the museum's two pubs now set to be home to Batham's Best Bitter and Batham's Mild. The launch means that the museum is now home to four successful local breweries in the Black Country Ales, Green Duck, Holden's and now Batham's, which makes it the only location in the country where real ale lovers can sample all four brands in the same place. Black Country Ales have been a supporter of the museum and a partner for several years, with the only pub to serve their beers outside of their own estate, forming part of its popular pub trail, being the museum's Bottle and Glass Inn. Holden's Brewery of Dudley is also sold at the museum's pubs, with their Golden Glow a favourite at the museum's Elephant and Castle. The final local brewery is a relative newcomer, Green Duck Brewery of Stourbridge, who also supply a range of different ales served in both pubs. It all makes for a unique pub crawl, where visitors can go from a drink in 1910 at the Spit and Sawdust Bottle and Glass Inn to their next tipple in the 1950s at the Elephant and Castle Pub. And the article's accompanied by a picture of the museum and brewery bosses toasting the new partnership at the Black Country Living Museum. They all look very pleased to have a big glass of beer in their hands. Penny Black, Back as Stamps Chart History by Alan Jones. Royal Mail has unveiled a new set of stamps paying tribute to some of the most famous designs in British postal history, including the Penny Black. The stamp was seen as groundbreaking when it was released in 1840, as it was the world's first adhesive postage stamp. It was followed by classics such as the Penny Red, the Penny Lilac and the 4D Jubilee of 1887. The stamps chart the evolution of British philately during Queen Victoria's reign. The main set of eight first-class stamps being revived are Penny Black, 1840, 2 Penny Blue, 1841, 6D Embossed, 1854, and the 4D First Letter Press, 1855. 1 shilling Small Letters, 1862, and Penny Red, 1864, Penny Lilac, 1881, and 4D Jubilee in 1887. They feature a watermark image printed on the reverse of each stamp, echoing the original anti-forgery designs from when they were first issued. David Gold, Royal Mail's Director of External Affairs, said, "Each of these stamps is a miniature masterpiece. Taken together, they tell the story of a communication revolution." The stamps and a range of collectible products are on general sale from November the 27th. And there's a photograph of the stamps to accompany the article. Amazing how plain they look in these days compared to the way we expect stamps these days, I suppose, when we've got all sorts of strange things, especially around Christmas time. We have very, very decorative stamps, don't we? But these are just a plain colour stamp with side view of Queen Victoria in different ages, I suppose, from being very young to a much older picture of her on the Jubilee of 1887.
Hiya, how you doing? It's Gavin, and I've got some readings for you from the 21st of November. Pubs help tackle loneliness at Christmas. A group of pubs are calling on customers to help spread festive cheer by writing Christmas cards to those facing loneliness and isolation this Christmas. The 13 pubs in the Black Country in Shropshire will join other pubs under the Proper Pubs banner in a festive appeal to provide drinks and write festive messages for people within their community. From Saturday, November 22nd to Saturday, December the 20th, all Proper Pubs are encouraging customers to write a festive message to fellow community members, whether they're a patient at a local hospital, part of a community group, or a resident at a local nursing home. Each pub will provide a list of potential recipients for customers to choose from and will even take care of the Christmas card delivery to ensure it is as easy as possible for anyone wanting to take part. Should the person writing the card wish to buy their recipient a drink, they just need to order it at the bar, request a receipt and staple it to their Christmas card so that the drink can be redeemed at any time. The cards will be sent out on Saturday, December 20th, just in time to bring a little joy and connection to those spending Christmas alone. The pubs taking part across the region are the Ashmore Inn in Wolverhampton, the Ashwood Inn in Stourbridge, the Bear in Stafford, the Boar's Head in Oswestry, the Bridge Inn in Trench, the Castle in Dudley, the Coach and Horses in West Bromwich, the County in Willenhall, the Jolly Crispin in Stourbridge, the United Kingdom Inn in Willenhall, the Watergate in Whitchurch, the White Swan in Worley, and the Wonder in Tividale. Vineyard makes limited edition red wine in founder's memory. A vineyard near Stourbridge has unveiled a limited edition commemorative red wine honouring its late founder, who died 2 months ago. As Halfpenny Green Wine Estate prepares to welcome up to 20,000 visitors in December, the finishing touches have been applied to its MCV Reserve, dedicated to the memory of Martin Charles Vickers, one of the most influential and respected figures in the English wine industry. The red wine, taken from the 2022 harvest of Rondeau grapes, is the estate's biggest tribute to Martin to date, with the idea first being mooted shortly after his death at the age of 82 in September 2024. Bursting with blackberry, plum and forest fruits, the wine also boasts a gentle warm spice with only a limited number of bottles available. Martin's legacy is deeply rooted in the region. In 1983, with his son Clive, he planted 400 vines on a small patch of their family farm. Today, that same patch has grown into a thriving 30-acre vineyard, producing hundreds of thousands of bottles each year. His passion for the industry extended beyond the family business, even supporting the planting of a new vineyard at Harper Adams University in Shropshire to help train the next generation of viticulturists. Clive, daughter-in-law Lisa, and grandchildren Imogen and Emily described Martin as a much-loved dad, granddad, and friend whose forward-thinking and indefatigable spirit shaped everything the estate has become. Alongside the release of the MCV Reserve, December is set to be the estate's busiest month in recent history. Visitors are expected to flock to its gift shop, butchers, deli and restaurant for some festive inspiration ahead of Christmas Day. Local and regional suppliers are again forming a major part of the estate's Christmas offering. On-site butcher Reg Phillips is taking Christmas meat orders, with all produce sourced from across Shropshire and his surrounding counties. His Christmas offerings include Christmas meat hampers and a range of seasonal meats including turkey crowns, bronze and white turkeys, free-range geese, ducks, cockerels, chicken, venison, pheasant, three bird roasts and game. Meanwhile, the estate's restaurant offers a seasonal menu with local ingredients and Christmas wine tours are now also available at the vineyard. Clive Vickers said, "This is shaping up to be our busiest December ever, and releasing a wine in Dad's honour makes it especially meaningful for us as a family. We're incredibly grateful for the support we continue to receive from visitors across the region." There's two images here as well in front of the Halfpenny Green Wine Estate. There is a picture of the late Martin Vickers pictured with his son Clive. And there's a picture of those two there, gentlemen there standing in front of the wine estate. And there's also a bottle of the red wine that will be sold, the MCV Reserve wine. Just a picture of the bottle there, and obviously the colour there will be mainly black with the blackberries in there as well. Delving deeper into the caverns. MP, once in a generation chance to show our World Heritage landscape. Visitors to Dudley Canal Tunnels could soon take an underground train through the world-famous Seven Sisters limestone caverns under ambitious multi-million pound tourism plans put forward by the tourism bosses. Dudley Canal and Caverns Trust has drawn up a £27 million plan to reopen a third tunnel at its site next to the Black Country Living Museum, which would link up with the Seven Sisters at Wren's Nest. A subterranean funicular railway would then take visitors to surface level, where they would be able to go on walking tours around the internationally significant geological site. It would be the first time since 1962 that the Wren's Nest Tunnel had been navigable to the visitors, and the first time since 1967 that the Seven Sisters had been open to the public. Paul Crofts, Chief Executive of Dudley Canal and Caverns Trust, said work could begin as early as 2027, and given a good wind, the scheme could be completed within 5 years. But he says a feasibility study would need to be carried out and the scheme would be dependent on securing the funding. The plans have been backed by Dudley MP Sonia Kumar, who raised it in the House of Commons last week. Ms Kumar said the vision set out by the Dudley Canal and Caverns Trust is truly transformational, not just for tourism, but for education, skills and community pride across our borough. Reopening the Wren's Nest Tunnel and revitalising the visitor centre would reconnect thousands of people with Dudley's remarkable geology and industrial heritage. I'm determined to help drive this forward. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to showcase our World Heritage landscape and to create jobs, learning experiences and reasons for families to visit and spend time here. I will continue working with the Trust and the Government to turn this ambitious plan into a real progress for Dudley. There's an image here with the caption, Dudley Canals and Caverns Trust has drawn up a £27 million plan to reopen a third tunnel which would link up with the Seven Sisters at Wren's Nest. And there's a picture of the underground caverns with a barge along the water and people boarding the barge. Plan to convert £1 million landmark house into children's home to be decided. Plans to convert a £1 million landmark house in Wensbury into a new children's home will be decided next week. The four-bed roundhouse in Reservoir Passage, a stone's throw from Wensbury Town Centre, which comes with a tennis court, swimming pool and its own windmill, will be converted into a residential home for up to four children. Sandwell Council's planning committee meets on November 26th to decide on the application. In a report published ahead of the meeting, the local authority's planning officers have recommended the move is approved. Earlier plans to convert the Hilltop home into a school for 30 children with social, emotional and mental health issues and learning difficulties was scrapped this year after Sandwell Council said surrounding roads were unsuitable to cope with demand and not enough parking spaces had been provided. A handful of objections were made against the plan when they were resubmitted in the summer. Concerns were raised over the impact the children's home would have on the area, particularly over traffic and parking. No objections were made by the council's highways department. The report by the council recommended the residential homes approval said the proposed change of use would be acceptable in this location and would not harm the living conditions of neighbouring occupiers, with particular regard to traffic movements, noise or disturbance and highway safety. The proposed home will be registered with Ofsted and the applicant states that the company currently operates six Ofsted registered homes and they state that all of which have achieved a good rating across all inspection areas.
Hello everyone, this is Linda, reading from Saturday the 22nd of November's Express and Star. The dock, mourned by Albion after death at the age of 95. There is also a photograph of Dr. Roger Rimmer with former Albion star Sir Bobby Robson, who he helped treat at the Hawthorns. A long-serving Albion club doctor, who went on to become an honorary life member, has died aged 95. Dr. Roger Rimmer passed away peacefully following a short illness on Thursday evening at Good Hope Hospital in Sutton Coalfield. He worked with some of Albion's great sides in almost four decades of active service to the Baggies, and in tribute has been named as without doubt the last great statesman of West Bromwich Albion. Albion will wear black armbands during Saturday's fixture away to Coventry City. West Bromwich-born Rimmer, known to all as the Doc, joined the club in 1958, initially as assistant doctor, before progressing to full-time club doctor 3 years later. He had qualified in 1955 and practised at Hallam Hospital, which became Sandwell General, and worked alongside Dr. James Mitchell, who he succeeded at the Hawthorns. He was in place for the great cup-winning successes of the 1960s, including League Cup victory in 1966, as well as two final appearances in the next 4 years, and an FA Cup triumph of 1968. Rimmer was a greatly valued member of the Albion backroom team when the club entertained supporters and fans of the game on a global style with the thrilling side of the late 1970s. He was still in service when Albion were in Division 2 playoff winners in 1993 and retired in 1995, aged 65. The doctor, who went on to live in Sutton Coalfield, was made a life member of the club shortly before his retirement. He was succeeded in the position at the Hawthorns by daughter Judith, who was club doctor for 7 years. Rimmer continued to travel home and away to watch the Baggies, and continued to watch the team as a home regularly until recently, with his last fixture, the win against Preston, last month. The club's long-serving photographer, Laurie Rampling, paid tribute by saying, "The Doc was an incredible man, someone I had met for the first time back in the 70s and instantly formed a lasting friendship." Roger was also a great supporter of the former Players Association and will be greatly missed by all the former Hawthorns heroes he tended to in his years as club doctor. In the 1970s, the club recognised his contribution by making him a life member, and he will always remain in our hearts and thoughts. He was, without doubt, the last great statesman of West Bromwich Albion Football Club, a memory that ranks alongside that of William Isaiah Bassett, Harry Keyes, Fred Everiss and Dr. John Evans. We last sat down under a year ago and he was still sharp as a tack. I've had messages from so many former players already, including Derek Statham, Wayne Faraday and Paul Raven. He will be greatly missed by all former players. Rimmer is survived by his daughter Judith and sons Andrew and John and three grandchildren, Sophie, Daniel and Matthew. Controversial HMO plans are recommended for approval. Proposal for 11-bed house of multiple occupation is scaled down from 20-bed plan. A plan to build a new HMO in Smethwick should be approved according to a recommendation from planners. The move to open the 11-bed house of multiple occupation, HMO, above Vinnie's Opticians in Smethwick High Street was scaled down from a 20-bed HMO plan submitted earlier this year. The original move angered residents in Victoria Avenue, a small row of houses behind the Smethwick shops, when it was submitted in March, who said it would make everything 100 times worse. The council has called the 20-bed HMO out of scale and over-intensive, which led to the plans being scaled down. Despite the reduction in size, the prospective HMO plans attracted similar objections from neighbours. A report by Sandwell Council's planning officers has recommended the application by Quinton-based Pritam Singh Gill from We Want Any Homes should be approved. Sandwell Council's planning committee meets on November the 26th to make a decision. The report by Sandwell Council said the amended development would not result in any significant loss of privacy or light to neighbouring properties. The previously proposed second floor extension, dormer windows and two-storey side extensions have all been removed from the current application. The proposal has been significantly amended and reduced in scale and design from the original proposal, which was seeking approval of an out-of-scale and over-intensive proposal. The council said the original 20-bed HMO application received several objections which were repeated when the plan was scaled down and put to the public again. In March, several objections were made with neighbours saying they already suffered from a lack of parking spaces and rats and other vermin from constant fly-tipping. early for Christmas bangers, but not of the food variety. It started. Stepping into my local supermarket this Tuesday, I was greeted by the unmistakable brass tones of Jonah Lewis' Stop the Cavalry. Christmas tunes blaring on November the 18th. The world's gone nuts. OK, nuts may be a little over the top. At least we're closer to this Christmas than the last one. And indeed, this weekend, many towns around the region will be enjoying light switch-on events, with some having already got stuck in with them days ago. Still, I can't help feel that outside of the pantheon of special events, Roy Wood, Noddy and Maria would do well to hang back until December. And Buble certainly shouldn't be emerging from his cave until that first advent calendar window goes pop. The look on the till assistant's face was a picture. Clearly, Louis's anti-war festive smasher and other Yuletide hits had been doing the rounds for some time already that morning. Rather than sparing, said the store worker in an early doors spirit of Christmas ecstasy, they seemed to have pushed her to the edge of almost wanting to mow down every rosy-cheeked well-wisher in the place with a candy cane crossbow. She did not look happy, and nor did I blame her. Hearing even one cavalry chorus this early in the day, and indeed year, was enough to make me wince, never mind the bungling stampede of premature jingle jive she'd been forced to endure. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I'm no Scrooge, and I love me a bit of seasonal cheer, but breaking out the Wham, Slade and Shaking Stevens too early just means that by the time we're halfway through December, they've become a right pain in the Chris rear. Let's wait until next month, supermarkets. It's only a week away. Now, records are one thing, but I have to say that something I'm certainly not unhappy to see early doors is the Christmas tucker being proudly showcased on the telly box this year by the likes of Dawn French and Tom Kerridge. A British institution famous for its drool-inducing festive grub, not the supermarket I had attended, I'll point out, has certainly pulled out all the stops this year, and its delightful array of festive finger food wizardry is always welcome on my plate as soon as the mighty maestros behind it dare to serve it. Said High Street Titan is, of course, not the only purveyor of Yuletide bounty dominating TV screens at the moment, with many rivals also getting our mouths watering with their offerings. It's the finger food, antipasti plates, cheese boards and starry bits that always get me going more than any turkey crown or rib of beef. With that, and with me taking the lead this year, I'm preparing the Morris family festive feast. I'm finally going to do what I've been threatening for years and serve a Christmas dinner that can be eaten in its entirety without cutlery. This isn't as uncultured or lazy as it might sound. For years on Christmas Day, I watched my late mother and grandmother proudly preside over the preparation of a sit-down four-course feast fit for any king or queen in the land, only for everyone, themselves included, to prefer the stand-up, park where you like, Boxing Day buffet 24 hours later. In a household packed with uncles, aunties and relatives, of an often very obscure nature, everyone became tethered to the dining table at once, meant little elbow room, leg room, and most importantly, belly expansion room. On Boxing Day, on the other hand, everyone was free to glide about as much as they wished, eat as much as they wanted exactly, and generally enjoy a carefree experience. When the glorious 25th of next month rolls round, those dining at Morris Manor this year will be treated to canapé heaven, topped off with an abundance of pigs in blankets, pork crackling, stuffing and bacon rolls made to Granny's secret recipe, with plenty of gravy, camembert and bread sauce available for dipping, and they'll be able to enjoy it all standing up, sitting down or even doing a headstand in the hallway. I'm thinking Christmas with a street food edge. I might even whip up a few turkey, brie and cranberry burritos. Now we're talking. This, ladies and gentlemen, isn't just any Christmas food. This is Dan Morris' Christmas food. And I must confess that sitting here, thinking about us, has in fact got me in the mood for a bit of festive music. Come on then, Jonah. Strike up that brass section. Plan for 24/7 casino approved, despite objections from police. Go-ahead given to extend hours despite concerns it would heighten risk of crime. A high street casino has been given permission to open 24 hours a day, despite objections from police and public health officials. Admiral Casino, based in the former NatWest Bank at 562 Bearwood Road in Bearwood Smethwick, currently opens from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day. Gambling firm Luxury Leisure applied to Sandwell Council to lift the restricted opening hours in the planning permission, which allowed the former bank to be converted into the adult gaming centre. Sandwell Council approved the application, despite objections from West Midlands Police and health bosses. Public health officials at Sandwell Council said extending the hours would cause significant harm to an area already struggling due to the number of 24-hour shops and venues and late-night takeaways. West Midlands Police objected to the 24/7 application, saying it would lead to an increase in vehicle crime, saying two cars had already been stolen in the immediate area in the last 12 months. The force said Bearwood Road was a high crime area, with 34 reports of antisocial behaviour made in the last 12 months. West Midlands Police said there had also been 24 burglaries reported since November 2024, 114 reports of violent crime and 24 reports of vehicle crime. The force's design crime out officer added that police had been called 17 times in the last 12 months, with 7 calls made between midnight and 6 a.m. relating to customers playing up or causing damage to gambling machines. Sandwell Council approved the change of use from a bank to an adult gaming centre in 2021. The bank closed in 2018 and remained empty for a number of years, despite a number of refurbishments being carried out. The casino already has a 24-hour licence from Sandwell Council, but needed the change in planning permission to open later. A 24-hour Admiral Casino is already open on the opposite side of Bearwood Road. Several other shops, a gym and other casinos in Bearwood Road already open 24 hours a day. Sandwell Council's Public Health Department said in its objection the proposed variation would cause significant harm to residential amenity through continuous noise, late-night disturbance and increased comings and goings, particularly during unsociable hours, the objection said. It would also heighten the risk of crime and disorder in the late-night economy. Importantly, Bearwood Road already contains a 24-hour gambling venue and there is a high concentration of other adult gaming centres and betting shops in the immediate vicinity. This section of Bearwood Road already experiences pressures from the night-time economy. In a statement included with the planning application, the firm said, "It is unclear why the hours of use were restricted. However, the principle of 24-hour and late-night use in the town centre is well established. Adult gaming centres are established bona fide town centre uses, which add to the diversity and choice of uses in town centre locations, and which have no harmful impact on retailing activity." Thieves stole cars worth £240,000. The car thief has been jailed for stealing 24 vehicles worth more than £240,000 from across the Black Country. Jake Tinsley, aged 21, stole the vehicles from addresses across Dudley, Sandwell and Wolverhampton between March and September this year. On March the 9th, he targeted an address in Amblecote, Stourbridge, where a Range Rover was stolen. The window of the vehicle was smashed to gain entry, and an electric device was used to drive the Range Rover away from the address. ANPR cameras spotted the stolen Range Rover in convoy with a Vauxhall Astra, which was used in the theft, which led to a police pursuit. Officers used a Stinger device to bring the Astra to a stop. Following forensic examination, Tinsley's fingerprints were discovered on the rear-view mirror of the Astra. Tinsley then went on to commit further offences. Officers from the Dudley Proactive Crime Team linked Tinsley to 26 offences, such as robbery and theft of motor vehicles, through forensic evidence, witness statements and video footage from an ANPR cameras and his own mobile phone. Tinsley of Hackford Road, Wolverhampton, was charged and pleaded guilty to all offences. He was sentenced to 4 years and 6 months in prison. PC Danny Hingley from Dudley Proactive Crime Team said, "Tinsley helped steal numerous high-value cars from Black Country residents, Fortunately, thanks to the public's help, we did manage to recover some of the vehicles stolen and were able to reunite them with their rightful owners. Across his 7-month crime spree, Tinsley targeted innocent residents.
Hello, this is Janet reading from the Express and Star for Monday, the 24th of November. Male stereotypes still persist. 1 in 10 men fake interest in sport and exaggerate how much alcohol they can drink, according to Samaritan's research, said to show outdated stereotypes persist around masculinity. More than 2/3 of men, 68%, said they would live differently if they were free from social judgment, including taking up singing, painting, or dancing, the survey found. 4 in 10 exaggerate aspects of their personality due to pressure to appear more masculine, while around 1/3 admitted to putting on an act to fit in with others. The research, published ahead of International Men's Day on November the 19th, found 12% of men admitted to faking an interest in sport, while the same proportion said they exaggerate how much alcohol they can drink, their physical strength and their tolerance for pain. Cuddle up to a Highland cow. A Shropshire farm is offering people the chance to cuddle a cow in a new experience taking social media by storm. Wonder Days, which offers gift experiences, say Highland cows have become the unexpected stars of TikTok and Instagram. Now the firm is offering people the chance to get up close and personal with the hairy beasts through its Highland cow cuddling experience at a farm in the Broseley area. People get 30 minutes to cosy up with the creatures, hand them their favourite snack, brush and groom them, and take a selfie. It is designed for small groups, maximum of 4 people and adults aged 18 plus. See wonderdays.co.uk/blog/cows-are-the-new-cats. Why everyone's falling in love with Highland cows. Paying lip service to the top tashes over the years. Once written off as a relic of the 1970s, the moustache is staging a confident return, fuelled by a new generation of style-savvy men reclaiming the upper lip. From Jacob Elordi to Timothy Chalamet, celebrities are starting to sport this contentious facial hair more and more on the red carpet. But getting a moustache right is easier said than done. It requires patience, care, and perhaps most importantly, confidence. So if you're looking for inspiration, here are some of the best moustaches throughout history. Graeme Souness, the ultimate example of the footballing hard man, the ex-Liverpool midfielder was uncompromising on the field and off. A magnificent statement of moustachioed manliness, his tash epitomises the footballer fashion of the late 1970s, and he had the curly hair to match. Icon, Freddie Mercury, the moustache most associated with the 1980s rock and with Freddie Mercury's legendary stage persona, was a thick, classic, full moustache, often described as part of the pornstache family, i.e. bold and statement-making. His moustache became almost as iconic as his vocals. Tom Selleck, the US actor's moustache is iconic, large, thick, expressive, and often called the definitive magnum moustache. Many regard it as one of the most recognisable in showbiz. His moustache is not delicate or subtle. It's bold, full, and synonymous with Selleck's look. Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan's moustache is textbook horseshoe moustache territory. The full moustache plus vertical extensions down the sides of the mouth, giving an upside-down U or horseshoe shape. The wrestling icon, coupled with a shaved head and his trademark handlebar-style blondness. Timothy Chalamet. Chalamet's moustache is a little more subtle than Hogan's. His sparse upper lip growth is otherwise known as the shadow moustache. Delicate, almost timid, but deliberate in style. It feels like an artistic gesture as opposed to a mandatory masculine accessory. Jacob Elordi, the newest addition to the Mustachioed Hall of Fame. Jacob Elordi has helped usher the Tash into Gen Z trending territory. The Australian actor, best known for Euphoria and his turn as Elvis Presley in Priscilla 2023, nods to the pencil moustache of Hollywood's golden age. Yet his laid-back styling and slightly scruffy hair gives it a thoroughly modern twist. Albert Einstein, perhaps the most famous moustache in science. Albert Einstein's facial hair was a chevron-style moustache, full, bushy, covering the upper lip and extending past the corners of the mouth. Some accounts say that by the 1930s he actually trimmed it less, letting it grow more freely than in earlier life. Region is UK's worst area for road litter. The West Midlands has been identified as the UK's worst region for increasing roadside litter, according to a new AA survey that has prompted fresh calls to crack down on car litter louts. The poll of more than 11,000 AA members, 63% of respondents in the West Midlands said they have noticed more rubbish on roads and surrounding areas compared with the past. That was the highest figure of any UK region, followed by 58% in the North East, 57% in both Eastern England and Yorkshire Humberside. Overall, 55% of drivers across the UK reported seeing more roadside rubbish, up from 52% in a similar survey carried out in May last year. Edmund King, director of the AA Charitable Trust, described the figures as a wake-up call and declared it is time to resolve the litter problems once and for all. The AA recommended local authorities should be given greater funding to support enforcement of vehicle occupants who drop litter and clean-up operations. It also called for investment in roadside infrastructure, such as larger and more prominent bins at lay-bys and service stations. Mr. King said, "There is no excuse for car litter-louts. Tossing rubbish from vehicles spoils the environment, costs millions, and puts road workers' lives at risk when they must clear up." Dealer is handed a 6-year prison term. A man from the Black Country has been jailed for 6 years for dealing monkey dust in Telford. Robert Hacking of Marketplace, Great Bridge, near Tipton, was sentenced at Shrewsbury Crown Court after previously pleading guilty to being concerned in the supply of Class A drugs, being concerned in the supply of Class B drugs, and using criminal property. During the hearing, the court heard how officers suspected the 36-year-old of being involved in the supply of methylene dioxypyrovalerone, monkey dust, along with other Class A and B drugs into Telford. On the 16th of April, officers from Telford's proactive CID arrested Hacking at his home address in Great Bridge and he was taken into custody. A search of his property was carried out and officers found numerous mobile phones and large amounts of cash. The mobile phones were seized and when examined were found to contain evidence showing he was running a county line, supplying heroin, crack cocaine, monkey dust, cannabis and amphetamine in Telford. There were also images on the phone that showed Hacking threatening people with a knife over money they owed in relation to drugs and photos showing 21 large bags of drugs ready to be sold. A large number of stolen items were recovered from within the property, including toiletries, chocolates and cosmetic products. Hacking was subsequently charged and pleaded guilty at an earlier hearing. On Thursday, he was given a 6-year custodial sentence. Detective Constable Nathan Thompson from West Mercia Police said, "We are pleased with the outcome in court, and I hope it sends a strong message to anyone who thinks it is okay to supply drugs into Telford. We will act on intelligence and we will continue to disrupt, target and apprehend those who are involved dealing drugs. This sentence shows we will not tolerate drug dealing and the harm it reaps upon our communities."
Hello, this is Trevor reading articles from the Express and Star from Tuesday, the 25th of November. Black Friday deals found at same price or cheaper at other times. 8 in 10 products advertised as Black Friday deals are the same price or cheaper at other times of the year. An annual study by Which? Suggests. The watchdog compared prices on 175 home, technology and health appliances from 8 major retailers: Amazon, AO, Argos, Boots, Currys, John Lewis, Richer Sounds and Very, for 6 months either side of Black Friday last year, to find that 83% were cheaper or the same on at least one other date outside the 4-week sales period. On the day of Black Friday itself, Which? Found there were no deals at all that were cheaper of the year. At John Lewis's, Which? Found that 94% of the products it analysed were the same price or cheaper at other times of the year. One of these deals involved a Samsung JetBot robot vacuum cleaner, which was £350 on Black Friday, but had been £299 for 29 days in May and June 2024. It was £399 for 35 days in August to September, before jumping to £500 during the first week of October. Also at John Lewis's, the Samsung Series freestanding EcoBubble washing machine was £399 on Black Friday, but had been the same price or cheaper on 108 occasions prior to the sale day and 115 after. It was cheaper than its Black Friday price 47 times after the sale, with a lowest price of £369. At Very, 93% of deals were the same price or cheaper outside of the Black Friday sales period. At AO, Which? Found that 85% of Black Friday deals offered during the 4-week sales period were at the same price or better at other times of the year. Which? Did find that Currys kept its promise that no sale products would have been cheaper in the 6 months prior to Black Friday. However, some items did drop in price after the event, and there were times before Black Friday where shoppers could have paid the same as the sales price. At Argos, which also has price promise, Which? Found that 79% of deals over the Black Friday sales period that researchers analysed were cheaper or the same price than at other times of the year. Which? Also found that Amazon's Black Friday deals were cheaper or the same price in 88% of cases and cheaper in 63% of cases outside of the sales period. In contrast, Richer Sounds had by far the best performance in the analysis, with only 55% of analysed products found to be cheaper at the same price at other times of the year. Which said that the findings showed that shoppers should not feel rushed into buying anything on Black Friday. Its retail editor, Rina Sawaris, said, "Our research exposes the harsh truth. For the majority of shoppers, Black Friday is a false economy. Retailers are relying on hype and urgency to push products that are the same price or even cheaper at other times of the year." Council crackdown stops 10 fraudulent right-to-buy bids. This article is by Deborah Hardiman. A Black Country Council has successfully stopped 10 fraudulent right-to-buy applications, which has protected around £750,000 in public funds. Sandwell Council said the efforts of its investigating officers from its home ownership and counter-fraud units would ensure the properties would remain available for those who need them the most. Following changes to the National Right to Buy scheme last year, which reduced the level of discount available to tenants, the council saw a significant surge in applications from tenants eager to benefit from the higher discount rates before the deadline. The council said while the vast majority of applications were genuine, officers recognised the potential risk of fraudulent claims and took steps to safeguard public assets. Through the diligent work of the units, robust checks were carried out on all applications. As a result of these, 10 applications have been halted due to the concerns of fraud since the start of the year. In addition to protecting public money, the council has also recovered several council properties, which are now being made available again to families on the housing waiting list. Investigations have further identified benefit and council tax overpayments, helping to recover additional funds for the borough. Councillor Vicky Smith, Sandwell Council Cabinet Member for Housing, said, "This is an excellent example of teamwork and vigilance across our housing and counter-fraud services. The surge in right-to-buy applications put real pressure on our teams, but their professionalism and attention to detail has ensured that public money and vital housing stock are protected for Sandwell residents. We want to reassure residents that while we support those who are eligible to buy their homes, we will continue to take a firm stance against anyone attempting to abuse our systems," she added. To report suspected fraud, email Sandwell Council at fraud_investigation@sandwell.gov.uk or call 0121 569 2650. In 2016, more than 6,000 people were waiting for a council house in the borough, with 36 having been on the list for more than a decade. Mason demands real fight from his Albion side. Ryan Mason has called for more from his Albion troops to stop them falling short in key moments. The Baggies threw away a 2-0 lead at Leaders Coventry, who are unbeaten at the CBS Arena, to lose on Saturday, as a careless dismissal for two cautions for Jason Malumbu proved costly. Head coach Mason felt his side's bright start and lead through Arne Hegerbo's double showed quality, but insisted more is needed to win games regularly in the Championship, including a better discipline and more togetherness and fight. "We show we can hurt them and have the quality there," Mason said of early optimism at Coventry. "It's just at this level, you need more than just to win games of football. You need to be consistency, a discipline, a togetherness, a real fight. At the minute, we're falling a little bit short in some moments in the games that we're being punished for, and they are hurting us big time." The struggling Baggies slipped down to 17th in the second tier ahead of a fixture against local rivals Birmingham under the lights at the Hawthorns on Wednesday night, from which Malumbi will be suspended. Mason added, "We scored a really good team goal, and from front to back, and look, we scored a lot of really good team goals. It does seem like we have a lot to work extremely hard to score our goals. A lot of our goals this season have been from really good bits of play." New Skills Campus is not just classrooms, it's experiences. Finishing touches are being put to a new college site which aims to boost careers. This article is by Daniel Walton. The Sandwell College Cradley Heath Skills Campus build is almost complete, with bosses saying that exciting things are coming. The Cradley Heath Skills Campus on Lower High Street, Cradley Heath, is almost ready to open, with education bosses setting their sights on transforming, upskilling and developing opportunities across the Black Country. The new dedicated and training centre, which is being developed as part of Sandwell College's Your Future, Our Focus plan, is set to open in January and will offer courses to upskill, retrain and build the knowledge of the region's learners of all ages. Sandwell Council Principal and CEO Lisa Kappa, MBE, said, "This building is fantastic. We were very fortunate to attract the funding from the Rowley Regis Town Fund Board. This money has enabled us to put in this high quality building for the residents of Cradley Heath. The Learning Compass has been developed with £9.3 million from the town's funds granted by the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government, with bosses saying that the investment reflects a wider commitment to strengthening and developing the local workforce. The building itself features a contemporary design reflecting a modern, yet simplistic and welcoming environment. However, the facility won't only be in place for learning, but for a place of exchange of knowledge and an area where locals can book to use crucial resources. As Kappa said, the community cafe near the entrance will be a place where individuals can come, open up and talk about themselves. It's a place where people exchange their knowledge. It will really fuel everything that we are trying to achieve here. As well as regular classrooms, the campus will feature specialist practical rooms, which focus on upskilling for various trades, including painting and decorating and caring sectors. Julian Kirkpatrick, head of campus, said, "We've designed a curriculum aimed at our local adults, with predominantly 18 to 24-year-olds being our target groups. We are very much aware of what the local and regional skills gaps are, and we are offering here mirrors that. Alongside that, we recognise construction is an area where local people want to move forward into local jobs. So we have a fantastic space in this building to develop a range of multi-trade skills. Ms. Kappa's vision is that the new facility will give those who want to upskill, retrain or relearn a comfortable space where they can work towards their goals. For our younger people, this means that being here might give them the confidence to move into the larger college setting and complete their higher level qualifications. For our adult learners, maybe they have thought about continuing their education or retraining or relearning or even looking for another line of work. This gives them that space. It's not just classrooms here, it's experiences, and it's giving that taste of what the future can be."
The Urgent Treatment Centre in Sandwell. The Urgent Treatment Centre is based at Sandwell Health Campus, formerly Sandwell Hospital, West Bromwich, and is accessible to all patients. It offers GP-led urgent but not emergency care for ailments such as suspected broken bones, abdominal pain and minor illnesses. Patients from all areas are able to attend. However, if they are not registered with a GP, they will be asked to sign up. The centre is open 7 days a week from 7 a.m. to 1 a.m. Appointments can be made by calling NHS 111 or you can walk in. For life-threatening emergency care, please go to the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital A&E Department, which is located in Grove Lane, Smethwick.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Now for the audio described television programmes for the week, beginning Saturday the 29th of November 2025, written by John and read by Demi. Saturday the 29th, let's start with a feel-good film. An inventor restores a racing car, which turns out to have magical powers. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang is on ITV3 at 12:25. In the afternoon film on BBC Two, Tyrone Power plays barrister Sir Wilfred Roberts, who leads the defence of murder suspect Leonard Vole. See how he gets on in Witness for the Prosecution on BBC Two at 12:50. The dancers take on a never-before-seen challenge in the ballroom in Strictly Come Dancing at 6:35 on BBC One. How about a trip by train through some of Europe's most spectacular scenery? You can do just that in Alpine Train at Christmas, 7:05 on Channel 4. Staying with Channel 4, Sandy Toksvig takes a journey along the French coast, discovering stories of monarchs, artists and celebrities who transformed the region into a prestigious holiday destination. Sandy Toksvig's Great Riviera Rail Trip on Channel 4 is at 7:05. With ITV's telethon grabbing the country's attention, Alan receives some unexpected attention. Changing Ends concludes on ITV1 at 10:05. Although not audio described, Match the Day is on BBC One at 10:25. On to Sunday, the 30th. More politicians are put under the spotlight on BBC One at 9 a.m. in Sunday with Laura Kunzberg. The Fletcher's bull calf arrives at the Royal Cheshire Show, but pre-show jitters kick in. Fletcher's Family Farm is on ITV One at 11:30 this morning. Are you ready for the big day? Jamie Oliver creates festive party food, including cheesy phyllo parcels and smoked trout pate starter in two editions of Jamie Cooks Christmas on Channel 4 from 5:30. In part four, an injured wild dog needs the support of his pack, and in return he cares for the pack's largest litter of puppies. Kingdom is on BBC One at 6:25. Tom Daly presents as the remaining six knitters take on Texture Week. Game of Wool, Britain's Best Knitter, is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Can Bob redeem himself after losing the fish of a lifetime when the duo visit the Scottish Highlands to fish for summer salmon? The last in the present series of Mortimer and Whitehouse Gone Fishing is on BBC Two at 9. Also at 9 is part 3 of Prisoner 951, the dramatised version of the true story of the imprisonment of Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe in Iran. Tonight, a careless remark from Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson threatens to derail her case. Now, a look at programmes that are on at the same time each weekday. The following are on BBC One. Rip Off Britain at 10:45, Homes Under the Hammer at 11:15, Bargain Hunt at 12:15, The Marvellous Miniature Workshop at 2 p.m. but not on Friday, Escape to the Country at 3 p.m. and now other channels, Chateau DIY at Christmas at 12:10 on Channel 4, two episodes of Heartbeat on ITV3 starting at 6 p.m. and the soaps are on their usual channels at their usual times. Back to the weekdays, starting with Monday the 1st. It's brain-teasing time of the week with Mastermind and University Challenge on BBC Two at 7:30 and 8:30 respectively. There's a behind-the-scenes look at some of the world's most extravagant yachts, witnessing the crew of a multi-million pound yacht who are hoping to beat their rivals in the Super Yacht Cup. Can they win? Find out in Inside the World's Most Luxurious Yachts on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Richard struggles to rebuild his role as a father and launches hunger strike in a bid to bring his wife home. Prisoners 951 concludes at 9 p.m. on BBC One. A new series set in Belfast during the Troubles starts tonight. Dolores Price comes from an IRA family. When Belfast erupts into violence following the disappearance of a mother of 10. Dolores swears she's not going to get involved. Say Nothing on Channel 4 at 9. Then there's a new comedy series about a 1970s PE teacher who is reborn in the present day. After Tony has a panic attack, he resolves to get fit but runs into his nemesis Terry at the gym. Mammoth is on BBC Two at 10. And on to Tuesday the 2nd. In the final part, Mary is joined by ghost star Kiel Smith Bino, who loves to host dinner parties, but is happier serving cocktails rather than food. Mary comes to the rescue with fillet tails of beef and a chocolate roulade before Kiel shares his lifelong passion for magic with Mary and his dinner guests. Mary at 90, A Lifetime of Cooking, on BBC Two at 7:30. Katja Alder concludes her tour of a corner of Europe which is rapidly changing, visiting Kosovo, Romania and Serbia, and sees how things have changed since the early 1990s. The Balkans, Europe's Forgotten Frontier, is on BBC Two at 8. There are two episodes of Say Nothing tonight, starting at 9 with Dolores helping a friend out of hospital in Land of the Password Wink and Nod, followed by I'll Be Seeing You, where Dolores the line between friend and foe blurs. These start at 9 on Channel 4. A new series on BBC One, David Dimbleby, has covered countless royal moments, yet he feels his job has been to help the palace present itself on its own terms. With interviews with royal insiders and political figures, David asks, what is the monarchy for? See how he gets on at 9 on BBC One. Now, Wednesday the 3rd, Grand Designs is looking for its House of the Year. Today, they are in the Brecon Beacons at a house built from sandstone quarried from the hills it overlooks. In Norwich, reinventing medieval building techniques using modern methods and hand-making bricks in Suffolk. So, Grand Designs House of the Year is on Channel 4 at 8 p.m. Remember the sycamore tree being felled in Northumberland? This two-part documentary tells the inside story of the Northumbria police investigation, The Sycamore Gap Mystery. It's on Channel 4 at 9. If you've been following Prisoner 951, there's the telling of the real story of Nazanin's 6-year imprisonment and the tireless campaign by her husband Richard to free her. Prisoner 951, The Hostage's Story, on BBC Two at 9. Shetland reaches the penultimate episode tonight on BBC One at 9. Tosh confronts Billy about his relationship with Robert Tulloch. Meanwhile, Calder, racked with guilt over Loudon, sets out to take revenge on those responsible. Thursday the 4th. In the penultimate episode, the teams have to tackle the longest leg of their race across the world. Their challenge is to get from Panama's Caribbean coast to Colombia's second largest city, Medellin. But the only route is via a challenging and expensive boat journey. Who has the budget to complete the trip first? Celebrity Race Across the World is on BBC One at 8. The second and concluding programme about the Northumberland sycamore tree tells how Northumbria police brought the perpetrators to justice. The Sycamore Gap Mystery is on Channel 4 at 9. The second part of the investigation into the murder of a man in Orkney questions whether the convicted killer, who was a 15-year-old schoolboy at the time, was capable of such a brutal crime. The Man in the Mask, an Orkney murder, is on BBC Two at 9. In the concluding part, Mia and Ewan take a deadly hike that reveals they have more in common than they expected, in The Ridge, on BBC Two at 9:45. Professor Caroline Dive is developing an innovative blood test to detect cancer before it is visible on a scan by looking for tiny fragments of cancer DNA in the blood. How she gets on is revealed in Cancer Detectives Finding the Cures on Channel 4 at 10. And finally, Friday the 5th. A crime writer is found stabbed to death in his villa, but all the suspects were on stage at the time, so who killed him? Find out in Return to Paradise on BBC One at 8. Susan Mulholland, the Batch Lady, offers seasonal hints and tips to the Waddington family, who are worried that they will fail to deliver the most important meal of the year when their family visit. All is revealed at 8 on Channel 4 in Batch from Scratch at Christmas. The Standing Stones and the Paradise of Thieves are the subtitles of two programmes from the Father Brown series. They are on the Ewan Drama Channel at 8 and 9 p.m. respectively. Malcolm surprises Gemma and Sadie with a weekend away, but when his estranged dad, Jackie, invites himself along, Malcolm struggles with his father's constant jibes. Daddy Issues is on BBC One at 9:35. And to close the week, can I recommend the late film on BBC Two? College graduate Benjamin returns home and finds a new tutor, Mrs. Robinson. The 5-star film, The Graduate, is on BBC Two at 11 p.m. Well, that's all for now. We hope you find something of interest in this week's suggestions.
TNF Soundings.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, November 29th. In this week's episode of Curious Cases, Hannah Fry and Darrow O'Brien explore what Earth would be like if the Earth's axis wasn't tilted. Radio 4, 10 a.m. for Curious Cases. Drama, The New Real. Two American political consultants who used to be colleagues end up advising opposing presidential candidates in an emerging democratic country in Eastern Europe. The New Real is at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon on Radio 4. Janáček is opera on Three's offering tonight, a new production of The Macropolis Case by Katie Mitchell, with soprano Oslin Studite as the world-famous opera singer Amelia Marty, who, thanks to an elixir, has lived for 300 years under different aliases. The Macropolis Case starts at 6 o'clock on Radio 3 on Saturday night. Sunday, November 30th, and marking the start of Advent, Carols Across the Country, A Seasonal Journey, is a day-long trail of festive song and performance that journeys right across the country. With live broadcasts from stunning locations, it begins in the Peak Wildlife Park in the Staffordshire Moorlands and completes its journey at St Andrews in Fife. Carols Across the Country, 6:30 in the morning on Sunday, Radio 3, and goes right through the day till 6:30 p.m. Lauren Laverne's guest this week on Desert Island Discs is wildlife presenter Gordon Buchanan. Radio 4, 10 a.m. And you can catch up with past guests on Desert Island Discs Revisited. Chance to hear a 2016 recording of novelist Gilly Cooper, who of course sadly recently died. Radio 4 Extra at 5 p.m. Back to Sunday afternoon, and a two-part drama starts, The Princess Bride, an adaptation of William Goldsmith's novel. Buttercup is in love with a farmhand who's about to become the most notorious man in the world. The Princess Bride, 3 o'clock, Radio 4, Sunday afternoon. And you can hear 4 Months in Gaza, a follow-up to the documentary 1 Week in Gaza, which was broadcast in June on Sunday, in which aid worker Hania Ajmal's audio diary offered an insight into life into central Gaza. A fragile peace is finally agreed, but Hania's personal situation changes dramatically. 4 Months in Gaza, 7:15, Sunday night, Radio 4. On to programmes then that are broadcast each day, at the same time, same radio station all week. Monday to Friday, same time, same radio station. You can tune in every day to Dorothy L. Sayers' mystery drama, Have His Carcass. Crime author Harriet Vane finds a body and Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter Wimsey investigates. A choice of times throughout the day, 6 in the morning, 11 a.m. or 5 p.m. each weekday, Radio 4 Extra. In Piccadilly, Krupya Padia tells the story of 5 men, including her father, who are the subjects of a photo taken in London's Piccadilly Circus in 1965 when they were in their 20s. All were recent Indian migrants from East Africa who met at a YMCA in London. Paddy tells the story of how they came here and what happened in the decades after. Piccadilly, Radio 4, each weekday, 11:45 in the morning. The Arrest tells the story of the 1998 legal battle to bring Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet to justice while he recovered from surgery in London. Every day of this week, Monday to Friday, 1:45 in the afternoon, on Radio 4. Composer of the week is Sir John Rutter, one of the biggest names in the 20th and 21st century choral world. 4 o'clock, each weekday, Radio 3. And Book of Bedtime is Small Boat, Vincent Delacroix's fictionalised account based on the case of 27 migrants who drowned when their dinghy capsized as they were crossing the channel in 2021. 10:45 each night on Radio 4. Some individual programmes then to listen to throughout the week, starting with Monday, December 1st. Behind the Crime explores whether it's possible to prevent crime by understanding the root causes of the offending behaviour. This week, a look at Ian, who pleaded guilty to indecent exposure. Radio 4, 11 in the morning. And Whatever Happened to Baby Jane Austen is a comedy starring Dawn French and Jennifer Saunders, bickering celebrity sisters. This week, Selena is invited to join the cast of the hit period drama Bridgerton. 2:15, Radio 4, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane Austen? Tuesday, December 2nd, and you can hear the second of the Wreath Lectures, in which Richard Bregman argues the small groups of committed citizens can instigate change in society, citing social pioneers such as Elizabeth Fry and Emil Pankhurst. 9 o'clock, Radio 4 on Tuesday morning. Drama on 4 is Made in Taiwan. George Tucker arrives in Beijing to start his dream job, but stumbles straight into a chaotic mix of surveillance, blackmail and dubious decisions. 2:15, Made in Taiwan, Radio 4, Tuesday afternoon. Front Row on Tuesday night, Nick Arhad explores a new exhibition curated by blind practitioners at the Henry Moore Institute in Leeds, which encourages people to experience art and sculpture through touch, sound and smell. Front Row, 7:15, Tuesday night, Radio 4. And of course, also on Tuesday, In Touch with Peter White. The latest news for the blind and partially sighted, 8:40pm, Radio 4. Wednesday, December 3rd. In Life Changing, engineer Michael Ashcroft describes how, after major surgery to remove a tumour behind his left ear, he was shocked and moved when he saw a reflection of his face in a hospital window. He immediately felt an overwhelming desire to capture that image. Life Changing, 9 o'clock, Radio 4, Wednesday morning. It's a new series of Trust, the comedy drama about a school in Salford. The fearsome financial fixer, Druti, has to make some drastic cost-cutting decisions, and a student pushes their support worker to the edge. 2:15, Radio 4, Wednesday afternoon. In this week's Child, India Rakusan examines why humans cry. She explores how tears connect to empathy and emotional development, as well as revealing how culture, gender and upbringing influence how we express and understand emotions. Child, Wednesday afternoon, 3:30, Radio 4. And Maureen Lipman celebrates the radical career of Barbra Streisand as, using BBC interviews, she traces the star's life from her Brooklyn childhood and recalls meeting Streisand in London. To Barbra, Radio 4 Extra, 4 o'clock, Wednesday afternoon. Thursday, December 4th, Sidelined, is the Radio 4 drama. Up-and-coming screenwriter Alice is having her first TV film directed by Carl Bunton, a major name in the industry. Then after a work night out, Alice's colleague Sita finds herself alone with Carl, leading to a potential scandal that tests the aspiring writer's loyalties. Sidelined, 2:15, Radio 4, Thursday afternoon. Emma Pinchbeck, chief executive of the Climate Change Committee, which advises the government on climate change, grew up in the Cotswolds. Martha Kearney meets her to hear about her love of the Gloucestershire countryside and her childhood in the Stroud Valleys. This Natural Life, Radio 4, 3 o'clock, Thursday afternoon. Finally, Friday, December 5th, Rare Earth celebrates urban wildlife with a look at the species that live alongside humans in towns and cities across the world. Just after the midday news, Radio 4, Friday lunchtime. Drama on 4, Limelight, Murder on Mars continues. Jazz discovers a surprise resident on Mars and Rita and Jazz venture onto the surface. 2:15 for the drama on Radio 4. Friday night is, of course, Music Night, and the first broadcast in 2024 marks a centenary of the death of Giacomo Puccini. Matthew Kofi Waldron conducts the BBC Concert Orchestra in a programme combining opera, theatre and cinema. And choir master Gareth Malone presents. It starts at 7:30 on Radio 3 on Friday night. And Gareth Malone actually pops up again, this time on Classic FM, with Gareth Malone's Classical Selection Box. It's a four-part series, three Friday night episodes and a two-hour special on Christmas Day. Tonight, you can hear highlights from Handel's Messiah, Tchaikovsky's The Nutcracker and Sleeping Beauty, and Prokofiev's Troika. Gareth Malone's Classical Selection Box, 9 o'clock, Friday night, on Classic FM. That's it. Thank you to Angela for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.
Hi everybody, this is Rosie and I'm reading the quiz this week as Sarah Ann sadly has a bit of laryngitis. Hopefully she will recover quickly. At any rate, here are some general knowledge questions for you. Here we go. Number one, which Dutch artist painted the Potato Eaters? Number two, which poet penned To a Skylark? Number three, Jimmy and Alison Porter are the central characters in which John Osborne play? Number four, near which Scottish city is the Scoon Palace? Number five, which chemical element takes its name from the Latin for bitter salt? Number six, what name is given to a cocktail made of vodka, cranberry and grapefruit juice? Seven, what colour was the history wedge in the original Trivial Pursuit board game? Eight, RA is the international registration code for vehicles in which country? 9. What is the highest hand in a game of poker? And lastly, number 10. Which is the only book in the Harry Potter series to win a Hugo Award for the best fantasy or science fiction work? Okay, well, I hope you did well on that round of general knowledge questions. And here are the questions this time along with the answers, so you can check. Number one, which Dutch artist painted the Potato Eaters? And that was Van Gogh. Number two, which poet penned To a Skylark? And that was Shelley. Number three, Jimmy and Alison Porter are the central characters in which John Osborne play. And that's Look Back in Anger. Number four, near which Scottish city is the Scoon Palace? And that's near Perth. Number five, which chemical element takes its name from the Latin for bitter salt? And that's aluminium. Number six, what name is given to a cocktail made of vodka, cranberry and grapefruit juice? And that's a sea breeze. Number seven, what colour was the history wedge in the original Trivial Pursuit board game? And it was yellow. Number eight, RA is the international registration code for vehicles in which country? And that's Argentina. Number nine, what is the highest hand in a game of poker? And it's a royal flush. And lastly, number 10. Which is the only book in the Harry Potter series to win a Hugo Award for the best fantasy or science fiction work? And that was The Goblet of Fire. I hope you guys all did well this week. Bye.
West Brom boss Ryan Mason urged his team to learn the lesson from Jason Malumbi's dismissal as they let a two-goal lead slip in their 3-2 defeat by Championship leaders Coventry City. Malumbi received his second yellow card of the game just 4 minutes into the second half at the CBS Arena after a brace by Orn Hegbo had put them on top. It was a lack of discipline in that moment. It's affected the result and it's something we need to learn from as a group. We played a really good first half, created some excellent moments, showed good personality and quality as well, and scored 2 really good goals. But at this level, and I think at any level, if you go down to 10 men, then it's going to be very hard. We weren't able to get through that initial period after we went down to 10 men. The crowd were up, they were able to get some momentum and were getting in our box a lot. We stayed in the game and gave ourselves a chance to get something out of it, but didn't really create anything from some of the set plays that we had. The Baggies are next in action when they host Birmingham City in a big derby clash on Wednesday.
My name's Gajinder, here from South Staffordshire Water. We're here to get customers on the priority service register. So if they're without water for 6 or more hours, our guys will get bottled water delivered to them. So they haven't got to go out themselves. We deliver it to their property.
You can register online, I don't
know. You can register online, yep.
Can you do it on the phone?
Yeah, you can also do it on the phone as well. And we do have leaflets here, so all the information is on the leaflets as well. Call on 0800 389 1011 or alternatively 0345 607046.
And do you offer, I've often heard about something called a social tariff. Do you offer that?
Yes, we do. So that's for customers that are on income under £22,050 per year for the household. We don't include 6 benefits on that. So we don't include PIP, Disability Living Allowance, Attendance Allowance, Carers Allowance or Housing Benefit. Anything else that you receive is counted as your income.
And maybe people could discuss with you whether it's worth them having a water meter
or not. Yeah, we can see what their rateable value is and if it will work out cheaper for them to go onto a meter. Thank you.
News and information from Sandwell Council. Sandwell Council Green Hit Squads. Coming to a town near you. Sandwell Council has begun a major clean-up programme to improve public spaces across all 6 towns in Sandwell. Running until the end of February 2026, the project will see 7 dedicated Green Hit Squads working ward by ward in each town to deliver deep cleans. Key activities will include cutting back overgrowth, litter picking, grass edging, moss removal, strimming, leaf litter clearance and general tidying. The project has also enabled the council to retain its seasonal workforce throughout the winter, providing continued employment for many local residents. Over the past 6 weeks, staff have received additional training to ensure they have the skills needed to deliver the intensive cleansing programme effectively. Councillor Keith Alcock, Cabinet Member for Environment and Highways at Sandwell Council, said, "We know that the local environment really matters to our residents and want to make Sandwell a cleaner, greener and safe place to live. The ward-by-ward cleanse will make a visible difference across housing sites, highways, parks and other public spaces to ensure that Sandwell is a place that everyone is proud to call home. The Green Hit Squads will tackle the spots on public land that have been identified directly by residents or through their local councillors. Any further spots identified during this campaign will be inspected to ensure as many areas are cleaned up as possible within the time and resources allocated." Safer Sandwell. CCTV upgrades to boost safety and crack down on crime in West Bromwich. Sandwell Council has delivered a major upgrade to the CCTV network in West Bromwich Town Centre as part of a wider effort to tackle crime and antisocial behaviour and improve how safe people feel in their local community. The new investment has replaced 30 ageing cameras with new high-definition wireless technology, providing sharper images, improved reliability and wider coverage across key crime and ASB hotspots. The enhanced system will play a vital role in identifying offenders, supporting police investigations and deterring criminal behaviour. The upgraded wireless network will also reduce costs, with footage sent securely to Sandwell Council's CCTV control room. These improvements directly support Sandwell's Community Safety Strategy 2022-2026, which prioritises tackling crime and ASB, They also respond to findings from Sandwell Residents Survey, which revealed that some residents feel unsafe in West Bromwich Town Centre during the day, and a higher proportion feel unsafe at night. The new CCTV system aims to address these concerns, improving both actual safety and perceptions of safety across the town centre. Councillor Suzanne Hartwell, Deputy Leader and Cabinet Member for Neighbourhoods and Community at Sandwell Council, said, "We've listened to what residents are telling us. People want to feel safe in West Bromwich. These new high-definition cameras will help catch offenders, deter antisocial behaviour and give the community greater confidence that their safety is our top priority." A similar project in Wednesbury is already delivering strong results with significant reductions in crime and antisocial behaviour across the town centre.
TNS Soundings.
Hi, I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
Vocalise is a national charity that makes the theatre and the arts so much more accessible and enjoyable for the blind and visually impaired.
Jessica Beale is the charity's marketing and audience development manager. We chatted to her and she began by explaining what Vocalise is all about.
Vocalise is a national charity and we've been going for around 28 years now. We provide audio description so that blind and visually impaired people can continue to enjoy accessing the arts, whether that's going to the theatre, a museum, gallery or heritage site. We provide the audio description so that you can continue to go out with your friends and family and enjoy all the wonderful arts and culture across the UK. We work with lots of freelancers all around the country, so we generally get contacted by the theatre or museum or gallery, and they will say that they want to provide audio description for a particular show, and we will then work with the describer and the venue itself to work out which date is going to be best and to make sure that there's enough time for the describer to prepare their audio described commentary. They'll go and see the show a couple of times beforehand to make sure that they're putting in the right information so that blind or visually impaired person can get the most from what they're going to see and not feel they're missing out from the things that are happening on the stage. There might be something that you need to find more information about. If it's a comedy, for example, and a lot of the jokes are all very visual, then the describers will be making sure that they put in enough information so that you can laugh along with the rest of the audience and you don't feel left out. Normally the describers work in pairs for a theatre performance, and before the actual live description, they'll go and watch the show and practice for the dry run with each other to make sure, again, that it all works perfectly for the night when it's going to happen. At Vocalise, we then will advertise the audio describe performance on our website or in our What's On guide, and we'll be able to let blind and visually impaired people know when they need to book in for. We'll put in the details, a telephone number and an email address normally, to contact the theatre directly to book their tickets to go and see the show. Then when they get to the theatre provides the headset to listen to the audio describe commentary through. And also for or vocalised performances, beforehand we provide some introductory notes. So that gives people an overview of what to expect for the show itself. Also, we'll tell people a bit about the show, some of the costumes and the characters. And then when it comes to the date itself, before the performance, we put on a touch tour. And this is one of those really special experiences where blind and visually impaired people get to, you normally get to go on the stage beforehand to experience the size of the set, and then you get to feel some of the props and bring on some of the costumes, and then also a lot of the cast come along as well, and you can meet some of the cast. They'll describe about their characters and explain their costumes, and if they're doing a different accent, they'll give you a demonstration of what to expect for when you're actually at the show watching and listening to the audio description itself. One of the things that we know, we hear from blind and visually impaired people, that they really enjoy the touch tour. It makes such a difference to be able to have that experience before actually seeing the show. And obviously, you know, if you meet the cast as well, it just makes it extra special. Unfortunately, we don't often know the touch door time until quite close to the performance itself. So if you see something and it's got touch door TBC, then it is always worth checking back or contacting us or the theatre nearer to the time to find out when the touch tour is going to be.
Having decided that you fancy a trip to the theatre, Jessica went on to explain how you could go about it.
We provide the information about what's available, but then it is for the blind or vision impaired people to be able to get there independently. We do obviously want to work with venues to be able to provide some, you know, easy access information through the website. That's another thing we do, is about accessibility to websites for the information, so that people can know when the access performances are and how to get to the theatre itself as well. But yeah, on the whole, people do need to be able to get there on their own. But the thing is, there's often, you know, concessions available for these performances, so you can go with friends and family. There's often a special ticket scheme, an access scheme, where you can get a half price ticket for you and a companion to go with you, or you get a reduced seating price, a companion goes for free. There's various different access schemes that can be offered to help people be able to go with someone and share the cost of being able to go and access the arts still. The ticket sales is managed, as I say, directly with the theatre itself, but a lot of the times they do put aside some seats for the access performance, knowing that, you know, that's the only performance during the run that it's accessible for them with the audio description. So often there will be some seats reserved specifically for access patrons. If you're looking at a show and, you know, sometimes a family member or friend might look on the show's website itself and it says that it's sold out, but it's still always worth contacting them on the phone numbers or email address that we provide, just to check if they have got any of the access tickets still available. Because as I say, often they keep some of those back and they're reserved specially for the audio described performances.
Through audio description and touch tours, Vocalise brings a wide range of the arts to those who might not think it's possible for them to enjoy. And they aren't the only ones who benefit from it, as Jessica explains.
The audio describers, they get so much from it, and, you know, we work at so many different venues. It's every job is different, it's so varied. The range of things that we describe, from, you know, your traditional plays and dramas and comedies. Obviously, we do the big West End musicals, and then we've got like ballet or dance and opera, all sorts of genres. They're all audio described. And, you know, that's just within the theatre. Then you've got the museums and the gallery sides of things. So there's just this whole immense different variety of things that, you know, you never know what you're going to be audio describing, I guess. The venues have a whole variety of different headsets, but the ones that are generally used with Vocalise, they look a bit like a doctor's stethoscope. So you put them in your ears and it hangs down, and on that hanging down bit, there's a transmitter receiver, and that connects up with the describers. So everything you hear is through your ears. You're not disturbing the rest of the audience, and it's the describers are there within the venue. They can see the stage, so they're able to describe. And then obviously, because it's live and things sometimes happen within a theatre, so that they're able to adapt on the spot. Sometimes they have to be very flexible with their audio description as well. But everything you hear comes through the headset. The numbers of people at the performances vary so much as well. Occasionally, you know, we have, you know, like 50 or so people. Obviously, that makes a touch tour quite crowded, so that can be a little bit difficult to manage. But as long as we know that there's going to be that many people in advance going, to make sure that the theatre's got enough headsets for people, then no, there's not really a limit on the amount of people that can go in. I mean, I'm visually impaired myself, so I've benefited from Vocalise. So I'm speaking passionately firsthand, as well as working for a wonderful organisation. I've also benefited from, you know, the theatre myself. And, you know, I came into experiencing audio description quite by chance. And this is the kind of thing we hear quite often, that, you know, audio description, it's this amazing thing, but it's still, it's surprising how people haven't found out about it yet. So the more that we can sort of spread the word, tell people not only about Vocalise, because there's other people that also put on the audio description, it might be the theatre, the venue itself, or a different provider. So we want to make sure that everyone can have all these opportunities. There's so much out there, and it does make a difference. Lots of people who have loved going to the theatre might start losing their sight later in life and then think, oh, how am I still going to be able to do that? I'm losing out on one of my loves. But this is a way that it can happen again, or that people can experience theatre for the first time even. It's sometimes people think that the arts are not accessible without vision, but this is a great way to prove that it is.
So having enjoyed a theatre trip, how about going to a museum or an art gallery with the audio describers from Vocalise?
The thing with museums is it's slightly different. So as I say, there's different options. Occasionally there is a live tour within a museum or gallery space where a limited number of people will join with a describer and a curator, and you'll all go around together to look at some of the highlights. But the majority of the work we do within the museum sector is producing the recorded audio describe guides, helping people to navigate their way around the space and being able to use one of the devices provided from the venue. You can sometimes download this guide from the website as well and take that with you on your phone and listen as you go around the gallery space and enjoy the exhibits that will be described in more detail for you. Sometimes within the museums, they produce some of the replica tactile objects as well, so you can actually get a sense of what you're looking at. They'll also sometimes produce a large print or a tactile map to be able to work your way around the gallery, and there's also often braille resources as well. Again, that's all very dependent on the venue, and you can check with them in advance before going along what to expect, what access they've got available.
Jessica goes on to explain about funding and the exciting new projects they have coming up.
So we're funded through the Arts Council for the majority of our funding, and then we work obviously with the theatres and the venues, and we charge the theatres for putting on the audio description because we have to pay obviously our staff and freelancers. So there's a cost to the theatre. I mean, that's why that it's not every performance that is audio described. The theatre do has to pay for the audio description, and obviously any other accessible performances they want to put on, whether that's BSL or captions or a relaxed performance. So it's all sort of cost within the theatre as well. But to actually join Vocalise and to find out all what's going on, then there's no cost, extra cost for that. We get other grants, so we're excited. We're going to be starting a new project soon to make more museums and heritage sites more accessible, working within the Sight Loss Councils at Thomas Pocklington Trust. And we've got some funding from the National Lottery Heritage Fund to put on this new project. We're also in the process of starting a new training opportunity for new audio describers, particularly for describers from global majority backgrounds. Obviously, it's important because there's such a range of shows that we describe to make sure that there's a voice that people can relate to, connected with the performance itself. So have a more rich pool of describers to be able to work with for all the different shows that we want to be able to describe. So it's not people only able to go and enjoy one type of show, that the whole range of things. There's so much diversity within the arts that obviously people want to be able to enjoy that diversity through audio description. So we want to make it possible for people to have as many opportunities as possible, you know, even with a visual impairment, to still be able to go out and enjoy the wonderful arts and culture that we've got all across the UK.
So you might have thought that the theatre and the arts were not as accessible to enjoy and be part of with a visual impairment. Vocalise and other such charities and organisation with their audio descriptions and touch tours opens up a whole new world of pleasure and enjoyment.
The lovely thing about the theatre is that it is for everyone and for all ages. So audio description is available for all sorts of shows. So whether that's children's shows or adults, it's the full range. So there are shows that specifically for children, obviously a lot of the musicals, so The Lion King and Wicked. Theatre is for all ages, so everyone loves going to the theatre, so whether that's children or adults, there's bound to be a show out there for them.
If you'd like to join Vocalise and find out more about what they can offer, their website is vocalise.co.uk. That's VOCALEYES.co.uk. You can email them on enquiries@vocalise.co.uk. That's enquiries@vocalise.co.uk. Or you can ring them on 020 7375 1043, Alternatively, you can write to them at Vocalise, care of Thomas Pocklington Trust, 3 Queen Square, London, WC1N3AR.
A big thank you to Jessica for all the information and insight into how Vocalise improves trips to the arts for those with a visual impairment.
Thank you for listening to Sound and Vision with Bob and Jill. So until the next time, take care, and it's goodbye from both of us.
TNS Soundings.
Hi, my name's Barry Lane. I work for the Beacon Centre for the Blind as their IT and assistive technology trainer. There's two of us who work for the Beacon Centre as IT trainers. There's myself and Andy Billingham. And then, so we teach people how to use their devices, whether it's phones or tablets or laptops. We can teach them magnification, or we can teach them screen readers software, so we can teach them how to use those devices once when they're on their sight loss journey. So that's what I do at the Beacon Centre. We also offer services from our learning team. We have employment coaches that can support people getting into employment, either looking for jobs or education. So we can do those things at the Beacon Centre as well.
You usually do this in people's homes, or do people come to you, or both?
We can, with the IT training, we can do both. We can come to homes, or we do like to encourage people to come to the Beacon Centre because that promotes independence. But so yeah, for the IT training, we can do home visits. With regards to the employment coaches, that is based at the Beacon Centre.
Can you help people get funding if they're eligible for funding at all, to buy stuff?
You mean grants and things like that?
Yes.
I'm not 100% sure, but I'm sure we could probably support with that.
Because I know over the years, RNIB has sometimes offered grants to help with buying IT equipment.
That's right, the Tech for Life grants.
That's right, that's what I'm thinking of.
I mean, I would certainly support someone with doing that if they've got a financial need, then definitely. I think that's the way of them staying connected, definitely. I think that's definitely worth doing. We could sit down and go through the application, certainly.
Because I think very often they want you to be supported by local society to
that's
get
right.
that money.
Yeah, you have to provide a supporting letter, so yeah, we can certainly do that, yeah.
Would you like to give some contact information?
Yeah, sure. So you could contact us at the Beacon Centre for the Blind. The telephone number there is 01902 880111, or you can email us at inquiries@beaconvision.org.
Well, thanks to Barry Lane for that interview a week or two ago at the SVI Forum. And Beacon Vision is written as all one word.
Hello, my name's Chris and I'm from Sandwell Libraries and I work for the Home Library Service. We offer a free home library service to all Sandwell residents who can't get to the local library. We visit once every 6 weeks on the same day. Yeah. We do books on CD now, audio books on CD.
Yeah.
That which we can deliver to your house once every 6 weeks if you're interested, and we do a big selection of large print books as well. If you want to contact us, our contact phone number is 0121 569 2600. Thank you.
BBC Sport England at the Hawthorns. Marvin Ducksh scored a late equaliser for Birmingham City in a pulsating Hawthorns derby against West Bromwich Albion. Alex Mowat grabbed his first championship goal of the season to give the Baggies a well-deserved lead during a dominant opening half performance. The visitors rallied during a thrilling second half, with German striker Ducksh grabbing his third goal in two games with a brilliant header. Both sides had chances to win as the game became more stretched during the final throws, but each had to settle for a point, which leaves Birmingham in ninth spot and West Brom 17th. Chris Davies' Birmingham side had scored 12 goals in their past three home games, but were largely second best during the opening half. It took just 33 seconds for Albion to make their first mark on the game as Toby Collier released the ball quickly into the path of Mikey Johnston, who spotted Isaac Price peeling off to the right and his angled rising shot sailed just over. On loan, Manchester United midfielder Collier was at the heart of Albion's next incisive move, freeing Callum Stiles down the left and the Hungary international cut into the box to fire in a right-footed shot, which James Beadle parried away. It was to be Collier's final contribution to the game. An injury forced him to be replaced by Ousmane Diakite just moments later. The Baggies responded swiftly to the adversity as a quick throw into the box was nodded into the path of Mowat, whose 20-yard low shot beat Beadle after deflecting against Christoph Klara. The lively Johnston threatened again before the break as his long-range effort just cleared the crossbar and Albion started the second half brightly with Arne Hegerbo's header saved by Beadle. Price twice went close in quick succession, having found himself in plenty of space down the left-hand side on each occasion, but both times he sent the ball into the stand. Birmingham began to come into proceedings and had a loud penalty shout waved away when Patrick Roberts' low cross struck Johnston's arm as the Albion man slid in to the block the cross. The visitors drew level in the 78th minute when Tommy Doyle's free kick, some 30 yards from goal, was met with a deft Dutch header that carried enough weight to clear a crowded penalty area and deceive goalkeeper Josh Griffiths. Blues could have won it on 86 minutes when Roberts carried the ball from his own half and released substitute Kyogo Furuhashi, who turned and smashed his effort just over the bar. West Bromwich Albion boss Ryan Mason to BBC Radio WM. "We were 1-0 up in a game we wanted to win. We created opportunities to go 2-0 up and we don't end up winning the game. The players put so much effort in. They are fighting for each other, showing so much quality at times, but not doing enough to get over the line. It's something we need to improve on. We are coming out of the wrong end of results, where we have had situations to put some distance between us and the opposition. We didn't do that tonight, and we got punished for it. We need to help the players to become more clinical, because we had some big opportunities. We are creating situations, so it is disappointing. I am super frustrated because the players gave everything tonight."
Thank you to all our volunteers who've read the Express and Star articles for us this week. Mia, Jan, Gavin, Linda, Janet and Trevor. Thank you to Rosie for standing in for doing the quiz this week because Sarah Ann has got laryngitis. And thanks, of course, as usual, to Sue for picking the articles, to Ray for putting everything together and editing it all, which is a huge task, and to Tony and Gavin for putting everything on the USB sticks for you and the CDs. Well, Christmas is coming. We're still working busily to bring you the fantastic Christmas special edition, which I hope you're all looking forward to. We've just had in Lauren's poem that she's written especially for it, and I'm sure you're going to love it because I certainly did. In fact, it made me cry, hopefully with happiness. Well, have a great time, everyone, and we'll be back again next week.
Thank you, Pam. Yes, there is a lot of good stuff coming up for our Christmas special, and I'm very busy getting to work on editing and selecting those things now, and that Christmas edition will be with you in the next 2 to 3 weeks. But I'm glad at the moment that the weather is getting milder, at least for the time being, because it's been very cold this last few days. So I hope that means if I get over to West Bromwich to record one or two of the Christmas contributions, that it'll be a bit warmer than it has been earlier this week. That's it for this week. Hope you've enjoyed listening. Do get the pen drives back to us as quickly as possible. And don't forget the podcast, if you want to hear the whole thing through, is available usually on a Friday. Though I think Sarita was a little bit late uploading it last week, but it did arrive on Saturday. Bye-bye for now then, and we'll be back with you all again next week.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.